we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
And welcome to the news quiz. As Euro 2016 prepares to kick off in France, we start with a cutting from the BBC Sport website, read by Caroline Nichols.
Knobs ruled out for England women.
Our thanks to Paul Travis in Oldham for sending in that football faux pas. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Camilla Long. And opposite them on my left, Lucy Porter and Sarah Kendall. Jeremy, which late arrivals crash the festivities?
OK, loads of people suddenly went on at the last hour to register to vote in the referendum, partly because Facebook instructed all its customers to register. One would hope that Mark Zuckerberg would instruct some of the Facebook users to tell them that their children are as clumsy, ignorant and small as anybody else's children. Any success they do have at school is probably down to dedicated teaching professionals rather than their idiot bragging parents. But the significance of Facebook is the youth of the people they were targeting, because 85% of people under 45 are younger than other people. They tend to favour staying in the European Union. And to be honest, I think it's fair to say that younger people do have more of a stake in the future of the country than older people. It sounds a bit rude to older people, but I don't think I should have an opinion as to whether or not Britain should bid for the World Cup in 2018.
Well, I find it scary that 43 is the pivotal age, because I am exactly 43.
How do you feel?
I worry that I'm going to have some kind of Jekyll and Hyde moment. I think it's been an interesting kind of clash of personalities.
Well, the Remain camp has recently been bolstered, of course, by the intervention not only of John Major, but in the United Front with Tony Blair, yeah. Who is enjoying the last few weeks when he can open his mouth without people only wanting to hear about the Iraq war, because Chilcot is about to report.
To explode.
And it's all been held up by this process called Maxwellisation, which means they've been hoping he's going to jump off a boat. But this whole thing of people not signing up to register is because of young people not really knowing what's going on. And people keep blaming Europe or blaming politicians for not telling people. People saying, but a lot of people don't know what Labour's position is. You think, well, find out. It's like people say, but people don't even know who their MEP is. I don't know who my MEP is. That is my fault. It's not a global conspiracy to keep me in the dark. The Illuminati didn't have a meeting and say, oh, let's not tell Jeremy, it'll only upset him. We try and cover for our ignorance by getting belligerent. It's because we feel defensive. That's when people go all like, well, I didn't know that. Czechoslovakia's broken up. Yeah, ages ago. What? Well, no one told me. Well, I expect Václav Havel had other things on his mind. I can't speak for him. I'm 55. I'm voting I don't care.
Sarah, you're from one of the world's great democracies. Where do you stand?
Thank you. What I find really interesting about this is that, from an outsider's perspective, as you're having this big argument, you know, this is huge debate taking place, and, like, Europe can hear you. You're, like, the meanest boyfriend in the world. You're like, yeah, babes, I don't know, I might stay, I might go, I don't know. He's just very controlling, I think I need a bit of time out. You're free to see other countries, though. Turkey wants to see you. Why don't you see Turkey for a bit? If you guys do vote out, like, just say there was a Brexit, are you allowed to re-enter if it doesn't work out?
You get 28 days.
It is. It's like the sort of Marks and Spencer's return policy.
Right.
Did anyone see the debate this week on the television?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yes, I did.
Yes,
I did.
Anyone remember
yes.
that?
Yeah. Yes.
Farage, he warned of a spate of sex attacks.
Yeah, he did.
If Britain didn't vote to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd hope he'd be able to work his frustration out some other way. But
Canterbury said he was pandering to people's worries and prejudices, to which Nigel replied, pandas are Chinese and you can't trust them.
He said the Archbishop, he accused the Archbishop of Canterbury of demonising him. He said, well, he's trying as hard as he can to exorcise the evil spirits.
he promised not to attack the Archbishop of Canterbury, Nigel Farage.
You want to tangle with Justin Welby, he's hard.
Is he? Have you got goss on him?
He used to be a cage fighter.
What was his cage fighting name?
Delia Smith. Ask David Icke if you don't believe me.
I don't know what David Coburn, the leader of UKIP in Scotland, said.
Oh, he said the debate had been rigged by the BBC, which it was on ITV. But I love the fact he stood by it. He said, well, I always think the BBC are behind these things in some way.
Unceasingly, this is the EU referendum. This week, with minutes to go before the deadline, the government voters registration website crashed due to the weight of demand, leading to a two-day extension to the deadline. The website had been set up to deal with all sorts of unlikely contingencies. The one thing they never bargained for, however, was enthusiasm. A voter registration drive on Facebook is thought to have given a major boost to the Remain campaign due to the demographic of Facebook's users. However, Vote Leave have hit back with a similar campaign. Recorded messages broadcast to hearing aids, post-it notes left in funeral parlours, and the running of a series of coded messages in the Puzzler. Also this week, David Cameron and Nigel Farage participated in a TV debate on the EU, and it really was rollicking entertainment. David Cameron was entirely unable to answer questions about immigration, having been refused his first-choice specialist subject of badminton between the wars. 2 points to Jeremy. Camilla, who was forced to be direct to a select few this week?
Oh, well, several people, actually. It's been the week of select committees. First up, it was the BHS drama in which the world's least convincing businessman, Dominic Chappell, was accused of... he was meant to have said that he was going to kill someone on the BHS board. All of this came out, and it was sort of a precursor to the big fight of the week, which was Mike Ashley, who has basically been running a gulag in the name of his company, Sports Direct. He's worth billions, and... he makes people work in his factory for effectively under the minimum wage.
They were all scared of Mike Ashley, weren't they? They started trying to challenge him and he just sort of, like, shut them down. It's like, don't pick on me, don't bully me, I'm a simple man. Because he's got this whole thing because he's a self-made man. You think there's an Allen key missing somewhere. But he just beat them. And he was a class act because they sort of said, when will this review finish? And he said, never. It will never be finished. What's this mysterious master criminal? And he said, could we just turn up any time at one of your factories where you have poor people making things? He said, you can turn up any time you like. I've got nothing to hide. I am ashamed. I wouldn't like it if someone treated me the way I treat my workers. I suffer from many personalities, some of them evil employers, some of them entirely ignorant of what I do. And they just were like, oh, my goodness, he's a rough diamond, isn't he? Who? I expect he's jolly good in a fight.
His chief line of defence was, I'm not Father Christmas.
Yeah.
he said, I don't think I'm Santa Claus, which there was a sort of opening up the tantalising possibility that maybe he is.
He was like a football manager trying to explain his tax avoidance.
He is a football manager.
Is he a football manager as well?
Yeah, he owns Newcastle United.
He owns Newcastle.
Yeah.
In Mike Ashley's defence... they said that he ran it like a gulag, and he said that sometimes it's necessary. And it's true. Sometimes you got to penalise people to get the best results out of them. I mean, look at Newcastle, for example. I mean, they've been relegated, so he's punished his players by... some of them are only earning, like, £32,000 per week. And that sends a really clear message.
He's like a cartoon villain. At one point, he said, sexual harassment is disgusting. Simple as that, fellas. And then he said, oh, no, sorry, not just fellas, girls. And he did, yeah, he said, I'm not Father Christmas, but he does run a workshop full of oppressed employees trying to make things to unrealistic deadlines, so...
Do you know any of the other practices that Sports Direct have been accused of?
Steve Turner, the Assistant General Secretary of Unite, said pregnant women are coming to work ill and get called ambulances or give birth in the toilets. Mm. It's like the bleakest nativity. It's just... it's all... because they don't even get long toilet breaks either. They've probably just got to rinse the baby off in a urinal and dry it in a Dyson air blade. Everything that's come out of this, you just think he shouldn't be at a parliamentary select committee. He should be being visited by three ghosts. You know?
Borderly, this is Sports Direct boss Mike Ashley and his long-awaited appearance before a House of Commons Select Committee, where he was grilled about his failure to pay some employees the minimum wage. But at the end of the day, when you enjoy no job security, endure daily searches, spend all of your waking hours locked in a dystopian warehouse, what need do you have for money? For you are rich indeed. Sports Direct currently have a six strikes and you're out policy. Incidents that lead to the incurring of a strike include turning up late, low productivity, asking for a glass of water, or arrogantly taking an unauthorised bathroom break when less than 10 centimetres dilated. Successive governments have rewarded the activities of what they call job creators, handing out tax breaks, giving Philip Green a knighthood, and making Stalin an honorary dame. There was also a select committee hearing about the collapse of BHS this week. Former CEO Darren Topp said that then-owner Dominic Chappell claimed to have been in the SAS and threatened to kill him. A true SAS man would never buckle under that sort of pressure. He'd simply go off-grid, build a bivouac, live off the land and drink his own urine, as God and indeed Ray Mears intended. 2 points to Camilla. Lucy, who will be nominated to pay for a broken glass ceiling?
Yes. So I am going to say something unfashionable, but I'm really, really excited about Hillary Clinton. And I think there's been a bit of a kind of meh, really kind of feeling. And I think what Hillary represents is incredibly important. She could be the first female president of the most powerful country in the world at a time when some people don't even think we should have female Ghostbusters. How can anyone not admire Hillary? She's been cheated on, she's been insulted. And right now, the only obstacle in the way of her getting her dream job is the living embodiment of white male privilege. It's basically either Hillary or an orange toddler in a wig. She has so clearly wanted this job since she was in the womb, whereas Trump decided to run about 5 minutes ago on a whim. And this
no,
race...
No, I think Trump has wanted this job since he was in the womb, definitely, as well. I think he's been gearing up to it for decades, since he was about 9 years old.
To be the first female leader of the Democrats.
Exactly.
To have an agenda, though. I think he will literally say anything. Like, you know...
Yeah, it's like someone else is going to sort the detail out. He's going to trust the person who advised him on his wig and skin colour.
Right,
to kind of...
Yeah.
Like, that guy knows what he's
doing. Just details. It's just details.
I don't think it is a wig. I think it's a really elaborate comb-over beginning at the anus. He's like a human Cartman. The great thing about South Park is they weren't real. This is what's terrifying. He's actually real. And you go, "Excuse you, Hillary, you bitch." Here, get in the kitchen, maybe vampire, Hillary.
I also do love Bernie as well, and I feel quite pleased he hasn't conceded yet, because I'm slightly worried it's the only thing that's keeping him alive, this. I'm worried he's going to, once he admits defeat, he's just going to disappear in a puff of smoke.
I think he hasn't conceded because he can't hear them.
Like my dad.
Yeah, they've told him she's got the nomination. He's gone, right, well, we'll keep going then. It's a classic problem you get with the elderly.
He looks like the sort of person that plays Monopoly right to the very end.
Yeah.
The thing I like about Hillary as well is that... I've got a theory, which is that Hillary just really likes the White House. Because, you know, like, I've lived in flats before. I think it's something like... You know, like, if you get a flat with a shower that's got really good water pressure... Yeah. And you go, I'll never get that back again. I think that she liked the way she decorated bits of it. Also, once she gets into the Oval Office, she is going to hire the hottest interns you have ever seen. Yeah.
Fluidly, this is the news that Hillary Clinton has been announced as the presumptive presidential candidate of the Democratic Party, showing that all it takes to make it to the top is pluck, determination and having been part of the highest echelon of the political establishment for 25 years. Her opponent, Bernie Sanders, has vowed to continue the contest on the basis that while Clinton may have a majority of delegates, a majority of superdelegates, and a lead in the popular vote of nearly 4 million, she has yet to make a dent in perhaps the most important category of all, namely, who Bernie Sanders thinks should be president. So, it's Trump versus Clinton. If you're having a hard time getting your head around it, the British equivalent would be Alan Sugar versus Norma Major. Roll on 2020. Are you a sugar babe or a majorette? 2 points to Lucy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Camilla have 4, and so too do Lucy and Sarah. We start round two with a sign spotted in a York laundrette.
When the light goes out, please remove all your clothes.
Our thanks to Nick Bird in York for sending us that full frontal request. Jeremy, which airport is failing to take off?
St Helena Airport in the South Atlantic. As every schoolboy knows, St Helena is where Napoleon was sent after Waterloo, which stands as a warning for the kind of early 19th century infantry square battle formation we will see if Britain leaves Europe. But Napoleon got sent, banished to exile in St. Helena, and now we've been spending money building them an airport. What's the point in having a special banishment island and then giving them an airport? Stupid idea. You send Napoleon there and then, oh, Bonaparte, what are you doing back here? Oh, I couldn't resist it when I saw the airport. I love. I bought myself some flip-flops in Fat Face. I had some sunglasses in Sunglass Hat, and I love stewardesses with their foundation. Oh, I love foundation. Surely the reason people go there is for solitude, one would have thought. Do they want an airport? A ship arrives once a month.
Postal boat.
A postal boat, yeah. Arrives with a letter about what's happening in the rest of the empire.
There is a lovely documentary, a two-part documentary, which is on the iPlayer at the moment. It's called Joining the Rest of Us, and it's a Radio 4 documentary which is presented by a vet on the island of St. Helena, and I had coincidentally listened to this. And it's really poignant listening now because it's all the islanders saying how excited they are about the airport's finally coming. We're going to get our airport. They're all there queuing up for the duty-free, you know, and it's not going to happen. But the airport can't open because planes landing in St. Helena are being blown off course. But you do think, is that a bad thing? I'm pretty sure your plane being blown off course in St. Helena is the most exciting thing to do in St. Helena. The runway of the airport was on the edge of a cliff, just in case the old Enterprise wasn't foolhardy. It doesn't sound like an airport. It sounds like an elaborate way for Wile E. Coyote to catch Roadrunner. St. Helena has roughly the same population as Toddington in Bedfordshire. If you invested £285 million in Toddington, you could buy Toddington and still have £284.5 million left over. And it's got a population of 4,255. So if the residents had to pay for it themselves, it'd cost £68,000 per person, which is about the same as the Garden Bridge.
Which I think should now happen.
Why don't they just come back? We haven't got an empire. It's like the Gibraltarians are all a bit worried because the whole, you know, with Brexit and then, Spain could close the border. And you think, yeah, but anyone with passing familiarity with aerial photography knows that you're in Spain. I mean, your border is with Andalusia, not Sussex.
In the documentary I listened to, it sounds like Britain in the 1940s, because everyone has slightly clipped accents.
Hello, apparently flying cars will soon be arriving in the island. I say, your bags are well pressed. Thank you, old chum. Little Chinese man at the laundry does it for me. Inscrutable, aren't they? Yes. Can't be trusted, but hardworking.
Mesmerically, this is the news of the building of an airport terminal on St. Helena, the British rock in the South Atlantic that not even the Argentinians want. The UK government has spent £285 million on the airport, but it's now been mothballed because the high winds at its cliff-top location make it too dangerous for commercial flights. The harsh weather conditions seem unlikely to change for St. Helena, although Michael Gove was quick to point out that if we leave the EU, the British government could negotiate its own position directly with Zephyrus, Lord of the Winds. Napoleon Bonaparte famously died on St. Helena, just one of the many leisure activities you'll soon be able to enjoy in this emerging tourist hotspot. Until the airport is open, the best way to get to St. Helena is the time-honoured method of strapping a puffin to each limb and jumping off a Falkland island. 2 points to Jeremy. Lucy, who's putting the old in gold?
This is the news that we can now put gold bars into our pension, which, for people my age and younger who can't really afford a pension anyway, they might as well say you can put unicorns and Noel Edmonds magic boxes into your pension. I only started my pension when I was 40, and I went to see my accountant, and she said I might as well start buying tins of dog food, because I'll have to eat them anyway, and they'll still probably just about be in date by the time I get there. It's the Royal Mint, which is in Lantrisant. I've got a lot of gold, and Lantrisant it's got a lovely art gallery with a very nice tea room, and parking is not difficult. I know that's not particularly funny, but it's the kind of thing that Radio 4 listeners lap up. I mean, it's a nice little thing if you can afford it, I suppose, but using gold bars for a pension plan is not really going to help me out. I'm keeping my fingers crossed they'll start accepting Cafe Nero stamps.
Have you got a pension, Jeremy?
No. Well, a bit. I took out a mortgage pension at the time when they said, oh, this is this new thing called a mortgage pension, whereby when you die...
There's a man in the front row laughing at Jeremy's
investment. Yeah, I know. It was in the 80s, and they said, this is the way of the future. There's no point in having any money because you spend it all on care. Whereas the best thing is to just squander it and then lie on the pavement outside a police station when you get to 65. A friend of mine works at Bank of England. He's seen the gold.
Really?
They showed him the gold. There's hardly any there because Gordon Brown flogged it all. Gordon Brown saw one of those adverts on the telly. And got rid of all the gold, and there's only a little bit left now. And that's got chocolate coins inside it. But the thing is, it's weird gold, because it's not really... Because we're not on the gold standard, so most money's electronic anyway. Most money's made up. Most money doesn't physically exist in the world. So what is the gold actually for? Can you make goblets out of it? I mean, does it have any... Can you do anything with gold apart from make wedding rings?
The scarcity is the only thing it's got going for it. Practically, it's not very useful. And if we all decided tomorrow, then it would have no... I mean, I'm going to invest in things that won't lose their value, like Sports Direct shares, things like that.
Putrescently, this is the news that the Royal Mint is to offer savers the chance to make gold bars a part of their pension fund. Economists state that gold is the asset of choice when investors worry about the fragility of the financial system. I'm all for planning ahead, but the way things are going, personally, I think you'd be better off with tinned food and a crossbow. Still, what better way to counteract the arrogance and hubris that has been the root of so many financial crises than by bringing the classy ethical aesthetic of a Swiss bank to your own home? I've been told to get into gold by my financial advisor, actually, an Irish gentleman with an office at the end of a refraction-based meteorological phenomenon. 2 points to Lucy. Sarah, have a listen to this.
A fella took me photograph, it cost 1 and 3. I said, when it was done, is that supposed to be me? You've properly mucked it up, the only thing I can see is me little stick of blank bull rock.
Sarah, why would Formby have been bad form?
This is a beautiful story. The Queen was asked to be the president of the George Formby Society, not the George Foreman Society, it's a totally different group, the George Formby Society. But she was told that she was too important to take that job. And it turns out she's a huge, huge fan. She knows and can sing all of his songs. The conversation was from the Radio Times, I think. Do you mind if I read this out?
I suspect we'll all be deeply moved.
To me, it felt like an excerpt from A Brief Encounter. OK, so this is how it went. So she received a letter from the George Formby Society. They asked her to be the president. Her correspondence secretary noted, "I don't honestly think, if you don't mind me saying so, this is inappropriate. You're the head of the armed forces, the head of the Church of England. I don't think you can be president of the George Formby Appreciation Society." To which the Queen replied, "Well, I do see that. But, you see, I love George Formby." "Really?" responded the secretary. "Oh, yes. I know all his songs. And I can sing them." What I really admire about that entire exchange is if, like, at no point she said, "I'm the Queen." "And you're fired, and I do what I want, because I'm the Queen."
I'd love to have heard her in the music halls, though. If it hadn't panned out, the whole Queen thing.
"I go cleaning windows to earn an honest pop. For a nosy Parker, it's an interesting job. It's a job that just suits me. Window cleaner you would be if you could see what I could see when I'm cleaning windows."
That got banned. Little Stick of Blackpool Rock got banned because they thought it was Lancastrian rhyming slang.
Yeah.
But bizarrely, My Dingling by Chuck Berry, he completely got away with that, which is far more graphic than Little Stick of Blackpool
Rock. Can she sing that too?
Do you think she knows? It would be amazing if you were the person who had to explain to the Queen, go, it's about his penis, Your Majesty.
Oh, she knows.
Apparently she's an amazing mimic, so perhaps she delights the whole palace with her George Ford, you know.
"Hello, Phil, it turns out nice again."
George Formby, little known fact, went over to South Africa after the war, and he with his wife, and they were so appalled by the regime that they abandoned the whole tour and they went off touring the townships to perform to black audiences. Little known fact about George Formby. So the Long Walk to Freedom should have featured him there at some point. In fact, he should have been... Idris Elba should have played George Formby in that.
Oh, and he would have nailed it.
Conclusively, this is the news that the Queen is a massive fan of George Formby and, in fact, considered becoming president of the George Formby Society. The Queen was advised that it would be inappropriate, given her role as head of the Church of England and head of the Armed Forces, two organisations which have always been in total conflict with the aims of George Formby. George Formby is famous for his double entendre-laden songs, such as With My Little Stick of Blackpool Rock, which is about his penis, Sitting on the Ice in the Ice Rink, which is about his penis, and Imagine Me in the Maginot Line, which is about the primacy of British sovereignty over faceless Brussels bureaucrats. And their penises. Jerry Maudsley, current president of the George Formby Society, said it was wonderful to know that the Queen is a fan. But that said, if she decided to run against him, he would be introducing her to a whole world of pain. 2 points to Sarah. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Lucy.
This has been sent in by Peter Bellchambers in Bouno Bonnevaux in France, who saw this announcement online from a group called Reopen Totnes. Why he's looking at the local news in Totnes, just gloating in Bouno Bonnevaux. This is the clipping. After winning a court appeal to overturn an existing pedestrian scheme and to allow traffic to drive straight through the town, Totnes traders are celebrating by closing the road and holding a street party.
Sarah.
This is taken from Sally Mosley's favourite walks in the Peak Advertiser. There were several anglers to be seen spaced out down the river, all in quiet contemplation, playing with their flies.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Lucy and Sarah have 8, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Camilla with 9. Before we leave you, here is an extract from the leaflet supplied with quinine sulfate tablets sent in by Beryl Armstrong.
Please tell your doctor if you suffer any of the following side effects: diarrhea, muscle weakness, loss of consciousness, coma, or death.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Camilla Long, Lucy Porter and Sarah Kendall. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair script was written by James Kettle, Robin Morgan and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Sarah Campbell and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Paul Sheehan. It was a BBC Studios production.